Rebel Room. I'm Case Kiefer, along with Mike Romala and Ray Brewer. I'm going to go with a shocker today. Let's start positive. UNLV basketball, we've talked about how it's kind of gone in waves this conference season. They started out with a really easy schedule that helped that winning the first three and five of the first six. Lately, they've played a really tough schedule. Now, it looks like they're back in a little bit of an easy stretch here. They're probably going to be favored in three, if not four, of their next games. And they definitely need it. They've dropped four out of five, including an 18-point loss to Fresno State on Saturday. Mike, what stands out about where the Rebels are right now?
They went into that five-game stretch where, you know, they started conference play 5-1, and then they had that five-game stretch against the top half of the league. They needed to win one to avoid a disaster. Two would have been good and that would have set them up really nicely to win 10, 11 games in conference. They only got one. They won at Boise State, which was a nice win. And they followed it up with a loss to Fresno State. So they got the one that they absolutely needed. 0-5 would have just given everyone a reason to jump ship and sort of write off the rest of the season. But they got the one win. They're well positioned. They can still get to 10 wins. They can still finish in the top five of the conference. A lot of it's going to depend on these next three games. They have to win all three. They've got Air Force at home. And we know what happened the last time they played Air Force. They gave up, 100-plus. In Colorado. And then they've got on the road at San Jose State and at Wyoming. They should be big favorites in both of those games. If you go 3-0, you're 9-5 in conference play. You're looking pretty good. You've got to win one of your last four, and then you get to 10 wins, which would be progress for Marvin Menzies. So you win these next three, and then find one more win the rest of the way, and Marvin Menzies can sort of wash his hands and call it a good year.
For me, I think progress comes in the Mountain West tournament. If you play in the semis, I think you label it as a step in the right direction. I mean, these 15 to 17 point losses where teams just score at will, that's been the startling thing for me. The Saturday game against Fresno, or the game they lost at San Diego State, or the game at Reno again, the game against Reno, which again doesn't really count because Reno's just so good, but UNLV allows the easiest baskets. Like, teams are putting up Nintendo numbers against UNLV's offense. And for me, that's what stands out. It's just awful sitting here talking about a team that has the potential to maybe win at Wyoming, or maybe have a 10-win league season, or maybe whatever, that's not going to any tournament. We know when the end's going to come. It just shouldn't be that way.
Right now, sitting fifth in the Mountain West, as Mike mentioned, 6-5. And I think that fifth, I think it's big to be in the upper five, because then if your goal is the rest of the fan base's goal to get to the semifinals, you only have to win one game in the Mountain West Conference. I have a really hard time believing with where they are that I would pick them to win in two straight days. And I believe if you're the six or lower, you're in that opening round.
Yeah, so you finish in the top five, and then you have to win one game. You have to win that second round game in the Mountain West. You get to buy it, and you might get to play one of those lower-seeded teams that come out of the first day. You put yourself in a pretty good spot if you finish top five, top four, if you can push it. I don't think that's going to happen. You're probably looking at fifth at best this season. Defensively, to what you were speaking to, Menzies made an interesting comment after they lost at Utah State. They gave up 82 points. They really couldn't defend anything that Utah State was doing. And after the game, Menzies said something along the lines of, we're not going to play any junk defenses anymore. We've tried to play, we've gone to zone for some games. We've done press in other games, trying to steal a game or steal possessions with, trick defenses. And he said, we're not going to do that anymore because that's not helping these guys get better. We're just going to play our defense now, and they are just going to have to improve and learn how to do it and take their lumps along the way. And, we've seen them take their lumps, so...
Let me ask you this. Is it a bad system or philosophy, or do they just not have five guys that play defense?
I don't think they have five guys that play good defense right now. I don't think the system is glaring. They ask their big men to do a lot, and that's one thing. If you watch Mbakay Jung, especially when he's in the game, they ask him to, on screen and rolls, go out well beyond the three-point line and contain ball handlers, and switch off, and then recover back into the lane. And that's a lot for a big man to do. Jong is okay at it, but it's easy to exploit if you're another team that can pass the ball quickly. It's bing, bang, boom, two passes, and then the ball's in the paint, and then the ball's out to the corner, the ball's out to the wing for an easy three while your defense is recovering. If it were me, I would just park Jong. I'd say, you know, stop hedging on those screens, just stay in the paint, make the other team shoot over you. UNLV's not doing that. They're asking a little bit more advanced than that.
Fresno shot over him, Grimala.
Fresno had an unbelievable three-point shooting game, but I think a lot of that was opened up because Jong is out of the lane, and then when the ball gets into the lane, other people have to recover and fill his spot, and that leaves perimeter guys open. And Fresno State is veteran enough where they get into the lane, they're not looking to make a bad shot. They're looking to pass it out to the next guy who's wide open. So I think that it did hurt them.
Because I know nothing about defense, right?
Nor do I.
Okay, I look at a stat sheet and I'm like, okay, player A did this because it tells me he did this. And I'm a reporter, right? I see he shot this, he scored this, he grabbed this rebound. I don't know the defense. But to me, when I watch the game on TV or I'm at the game, I'm just like, who the hell is guarding these people? Like, you got to be near the person, right? I mean, how a pickup game is on July 30th at the Mendenhall Center.
So if you're saying they're playing Menzies' system, they should be probably further along this season than they are now. If they play freshmen, but at this point in the season, you know, you've played 20-something games. Like, your freshmen should know your defensive system. And I think that's what Menzies was getting at when he said, you know, we've got to stop playing these junk defenses. We can't throw out a 1-3-1 for the second half of a game. And just to try and steal a game, because in the long run, that's not going to help our guys become better defenders. We're just trying to trick other teams. So they're going to have to – I think they're just going to play this defense the rest of the way and hope that the players in these last eight games or however many they have left, I think they're just going to hope that the players get better with more reps and just get into the groove and sort of close some of those gaps just incrementally. And if you can play a little bit better defense – make your threes, maybe you can make that run to the semifinals or the finals of the conference tournament. But, the defense has got to get better. I think that's what Menzies was addressing. You can't trick people the entire rest of the season. You're going to have to just get in your stance and guard someone, and I think that's what he wants them to do now. Problem is they're not good at it yet.
Yeah, not to, kind of dive this back into the same topic we were last week, but I would like to get your guys' thoughts on that, if that's the right move. I mean, you look at the personnel they have, and I haven't seen as much of UNLV as you two guys, but from what I've seen this year, you would think those quote-unquote, I like that too, junk defenses would probably lead to more success, even if they hadn't. I think that would probably be the way to go, but of course, you know, this season at this point is kind of looking forward in developing and getting this team in the right, place where they can do something in the future. So maybe you do go through the lumps and let them play, man up and play the way Menzies wants to play defense. I don't know. What do you think of that? Should we ditch the junk defenses? Is it a good call?
Like, there were times when there were seasons where he said, you know, our man-to-man defense is not any good. We're going to scrap it. We're going to play zone.
The amoeba defense, legendary, Grimala.
That's more of an attacking. But there were times, when they went to his own defense out of necessity. So it's not the worst thing in the world, but I think Menzies is saying he's tipping his cap to the developmental side. Like, a lot of people want him to play the freshmen, play the young guys in the name of development, and he's sort of resisted that to this point. I think defensively you are seeing him say, hey, we need to develop these guys defensively. We could stick them in a 2-3 zone, and that might help us win a game or two more than we would have otherwise. But in the long run, he doesn't want to be a 2-3 team. He wants to be like a man-to-man rotating defense with his big man hedging out and recovering and everybody rotating behind him. Okay, and if that's what you want to be, then you've got to make them do it at some point.
Let me ask you this. Your opinion. We're giving opinions. Do you think the Rebels – like, I'm looking for – and I hate to say this because you know I'm a nice guy, self-proclaimed. Would you like to see UNLV maybe knock somebody on their tail at one point? Do they need to be a little nastier?
I think
they're too friendly.
I think Noah Robotham would like that. At the Utah State game, he got knocked down in the final minutes during a blowout, and no one did anything. The Rebels just played out the rest of the possession, let Utah State hit a three-pointer, and then they lost by 17. And after the game, his comments was, I would have liked to have, seen someone, chuck him on the other end.
Lost by 17 could have been 30.
Yeah, he equated it to if someone takes a dirty hit on your quarterback in football, you've got to make them pay. You need the enforcer to make them pay. So I think they do need some toughness. I don't know where it's coming from. Like I look at the lineup they put on the floor and like who's the tough guy? Like I don't know if they have a guy like that. So maybe a little edge on defense would help them. I think the bigger problem, more so than attitude, is just physical attributes. They don't have guys that are long and quick enough to sort of be bothersome defenders. Like Amori Hardy is a small shooting guard. Chris Clyburn is, you know, ordinary in terms of length and quickness. Joel Tomboy is, you know, he's not the quickest of foot. He's energetic and he's a guy who will win a loose ball, but I don't know if he's a guy that can get down in a stance and defend someone off the dribble yet at this point in his career. So the toughness you would like to see, but first and foremost, I just think they need the length and they need quickness.
Yeah, need length and quickness and a miracle. Another middle of the pack to bottom of the pack season in the books, which we knew was coming. I mean, we sat in here in November when we talked about the season and we knew it was going to come down this way. Then all of a sudden they're 4-0 in league, 5-1 in league, and you're like, yeah, maybe this will be a little different, right? And now that they're what they are, teetering around 500, middle of the road, it's just like I could see where, you know, the fans, you know, discomfort with this, the current situation is because it's just, you know, whatever, they're treading water. And, you know, next year, we talked about this last week, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, that you're essentially putting out the same team next year without their best player, allegedly, Robotham and Clyburn. That's it. That's all I got today.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to disagree with anything you're saying. I will say, I think Mike mentioned this earlier, but I think it was big to at least win one of these two games last week. They do go to Boise and win by 11, kind of mirrored the Fresno State game in that one team seemed to shoot ridiculous from three. I think UNLV shot over 50%, and that looked like the difference in that game, just as Fresno State was unconscious to kind of be the difference on Saturday.
Worst defensive UNLV team that we've seen in a while, but without question, the best shooting team that we've seen, at least since I've been covering the team. This is, I think, my sixth season now covering the team, and they haven't had a team that's shot the ball this well in conference play or throughout the season. So in basketball, what is the great equalizer in your one-and-done scenarios? It's outside shooting. If UNLV goes into a game against anyone and makes 16 out of 30 from three-point range, you're giving yourself a chance. So, I mean, it's not what you want to hang your hat on, being a bad defensive team that can bail yourself out with three-pointers. But, hey, if that's what it comes down to, at least you're giving yourself a chance more so than the last year's version of the team, which, you know, would hit five or six three-pointers in a game, and you had to play perfect offense in order to make up the difference. So they're at least giving themselves a chance by sort of catching up to the rest of the world in terms of how to play basketball these days.
I feel like Brewer should be cheerier then, is we want to talk about things we sat in here in November and said. I think, Brewer, you said the most important thing of the season is to keep the three-point streak alive.
Definitely.
It certainly looks like that's going to happen.
I was at that Reno game. They were three-pointless in the first half, and Grimala was, of course, like he does, egging me on. Like,
I believe I was just asking, like, is this the night?
No. And they hit one in, like, the first minute of the second half, and I was like, all right, I could go home now.
The streak is not going to end this year. Coming into the season, we were worried about that because this looked like it was going to be a terrible shooting team that wasn't even going to, they weren't going to take a lot, and they were going to shoot a low percentage, which is a bad recipe. But it's been the opposite. They take a ton, and they're the best shooting team in the league. So they're not going to go 40 minutes without making one.
And that's why you want to go glass half full for a minute. Outside of Reno, even though they looked awful against Fresno, I think they could beat any team in the league if they make their shots outside of Reno. So why can't they make the finals of the league tournament, especially if they finish in the top six and get a bye?
That Utah State team is really good. I don't know if UNLV can outshoot them.
Well, maybe Utah State aligns with Reno.
But I hear what you're saying. Yeah, it's Fresno State just beat you in your place. But I would not completely rule out UNLV from winning a rematch on a neutral court. if Fresno State's shooting takes a step back and if UNLV makes more. You could say that about any team in the league, like you said, against except for probably Reno. I don't know how much progress that is in terms of how much progress are you making with the program. Are you bringing in better players? Do you have it? Do you have your whole system up and running, or are you just hitting a lot of shots? That's sort of the balance that you have to weigh when you're deciding how excited you want to be about this season and about any potential run that they might make. It's sort of based on, is it a mirage? Is that 3-point shooting just a mirage this season?
Yeah, I mean, to Menzies' credit, you know, his second recruiting class, he brought in a McDonald's All-American, a 4-star recruit in Hardy, and the JC Player of the Year in Juice Box. Last year, he brought in a 4-star guy in Hamilton, you know, and he convinced Robotham to come and sit for a year, a guy who averaged in double figures at Akron, to come sit for a year. So he's done a good job of getting guys to come here, right? I mean, a good enough job. It's just, is it ever going to click? Are they ever going to go through and have a 23-win season and threaten to make the NIT?
I'm going back a little bit, but I think it's your eternal optimism. It's probably 10 minutes ago we were sitting in here talking to you. We want to see UNLV get to the semifinals. Now we've elevated it to the finals. To repeat myself, but I think it's important to mention it's the top five that get a bye. So if you're sixth, you have to play that extra game. I think them getting to the finals sounds a little crazy to me. I mean, I just think there's at least three teams that are just clearly better than them. I think semifinals, that'd be good to shoot for. You end the season on a high note. Reno, Utah State, and Fresno, I'm not picking them to beat in the tournament right now.
I don't want to stoke the optimism because I don't think this UNLV team is, you know, on the same level as, you know, a team that could win the Mountain West tournament. But I mean, last year, New Mexico made it to the finals, and they got a really good draw. I mean, is this UNLV team much worse than that New Mexico team last year? Probably not. So, I mean, you never know, but
I would say definitely not. I guess though, what I'm thinking, I don't know if they're going to get a good draw. I mean, what if we see everything breaking right for the rest of the season? What do we have them at? The 4 seed, and then that's still a Reno matchup in the semifinals. And I just think, and yeah, Reno. Speaking of New Mexico, they've still been prone to a terrible game like New Mexico. But I just think their odds are extremely low to get by Reno in the Mountain West tournament. I think that's probably what it would take to get to the finals.
Yeah, I always point to that New Mexico team because they got hot towards the end of the year, and they could have made it to the NCAA tournament without playing Reno in the conference tourney. They would have only had to beat San Diego State in the finals. They were the favorite in that game, and if they had won it, they would have been in the NCAA tournament. So it's not impossible in this league. It is, at the end of the day, a bad league with one good team in it. But I also don't want to use that as an example of progress in favor of Marvin Menzies, because it's not really progress being made with the team. It's just that the league is so bad that, you know, all just about anyone has a chance as long as you make 3-pointers. So, like, UNLV is not dead. They still have a chance. They still have the same chance that they had 3 weeks ago or at the beginning of the season, which is, you know, that puncher's chance. If you make your shots, you can win some games. But I don't know how much that counts as, you know, good progress for the team is what I'm trying to say.
I like the parallels, though. This time last year, New Mexico sitting at 7-6 in the conference, then won, it looks like, 6 games in a row to get to the finals. So UNLV 6-5, right in the middle of the conference.
I just think any positive momentum for the program, you got to take now, right? I mean, if you could, you know, win a game or two in the league tournament and get a little buzz going to where you could get to a Friday night or a Saturday when people might want to go watch you play and have a vested interest. You know, if Amari Hardy could take a gigantic step forward in this last month, right, he's your guy. If Hamilton gets on the floor a little more and takes us, if there could be tangible pieces where you're like, okay, Marvin's got these three guys that I write about every time I go to the game, right? Hardy, Hamilton, and JTT, or the other guy I write about. Otenye.
And Tomboy.
Same guy.
Tomboy.
If those three guys could, like, have the greatest month in development history, and you could say, oh, God, UNLV's got this coming back, then maybe you could get a little excitement going. But losing by 18 points at home at 3 in the afternoon on a Saturday in front of 82 people in Guatemala. You know? Am I right, Guatemala?
Yes. It's a
tough pill to swallow because now you're in a tough situation with Menzies because some people want him gone, say that he's not exciting you enough to bring fans to the arena. And other people are like, listen, when you screwed up the coaching search, this is what you got, and you can't just get rid of the guy. You got to give him an opportunity for that fourth year. And you're in a real crappy situation because if you get rid of him, you still got to pay him. And mind you, you're still paying two coaches this year, right? And nobody's at the games. The team's uninteresting.
Yeah, those pictures of the games are depressing.
It's freaking embarrassing. This is the Thomas and Mack Center, the UNLV running Rebels, right? And you're hoping that the air conditioning's on the right way and they hit the threes and the other team doesn't. And I like Marvin. That's the worst part. He's an engaging guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is.
He's an engaging guy. I like Marvin a lot, and I think he's a good recruiter.
It's just
a crappy scenario. If people would show up like they did for that Arizona game or for when they played Reno this year.
Some of that has to be on Marvin Menzies because he doesn't schedule those teams.
That's 100% true.
Marvin he takes a lot of the blame for those home crowds because, you know, Loyola Marymount was, you know, one of the best teams that they played in non-conference play, and no one's going to come out to watch those games.
Valpo, Rick Smith's kid destroyed us. Absolutely demolished us.
Yeah, and I don't know 100% where I fall on this, but just to play devil's advocate, and I'm sure what a lot of fans that are on the opposite side of the fence of you are saying is, I mean, we are on year three. Marvin Menzies knew what he was going into. I know the coaching search was a disaster. It was mishandled. Everything went wrong. But aren't you kind of sick of hearing about that after 3 years and you accept the job knowing what's going to be expected of you? Now you're in year three. I just feel like you can only use that for so long. Like I said, I'm kind of in the middle on this, but I can see both sides.
Here's Marvin Menzies. It's sort of, to me, it kind of parallels the Tony Sanchez situation with football because Menzies, I do think that he's doing good things for the program. I do think he's got them moving on an upward sort of trajectory, but it's not straight up. It's like incrementally, like you're talking about 10-8 in the Mountain West this season as progress. And, you know, it's that rate where Tony Sanchez wins one more game every year, then eventually 5 years from now, you'll be a good team. Whereas Marvin Menzies is sort of on that same trajectory where, he's bringing in some better players and they are winning more games, but it's just so, when are they going to make that leap?
The difference between Menzies and Sanchez, though, is Menzies came in and he had the Mendenhall Center, he had the Thomas and Mack, he had the Natty and the banner, he had the statue of Tark.
Say it.
He had all the history and tradition.
I'm
not done. Tony came in, he had a bag of peanuts and some stains on the carpet.
I just wanted you to say name on the front of the jersey.
He had the name on the front
it.
Of the jersey. Tony came in, he got stains on the carpet, he had one tight end, he didn't have enough offensive linemen for spring practice. He's fundraised and billed, and he beat Reno twice.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the job has been the same. The only parallel I was making is that...
And Menzies makes double.
The only parallel I was trying to make is that I think Sanchez has been doing good things for the program. It's just it hasn't been that astronomic, you know, leap forward. It's just been like slow, steady progress. Whereas Menzies is sort of doing the same thing, slow, steady progress. And fans want that. They want that spark.
They
want to
be in the Fiesta Bowl and the Final Four in the same year. To Sanchez's credit, UNLV, a perennial two-win program. He's winning four.
I mean, those expectations are more realistic for the basketball program. Like, the basketball program could take a leap forward, where football really can't do that, I think. So I'm just saying, Menzies, I do think he's doing good things for the program, but it's not coming fast enough for most people's liking.
I got to defend the fans a little bit, too. That's ridiculous, saying they want to be in the Fiesta Bowl and the Final Four. I think the Zaxby's Bowl and, like, NIT contention, I think fans would be happy with at this point.
I don't think basketball fans would be happy with NIT.
Okay, well, I hear what you're saying.
Yeah,
or
exactly.
Maybe, like, a two-seed chance to win your way into the tournament,
Yeah, give
maybe?
Them something to be excited about in, you know, late February and March. Give them a reason to watch Selection Sunday or to come out to these Mountain West tournament games. I get what you're saying. It definitely... makes sense. The bar is not super, super high. It's not Tark level high. It's like Kruger level high. Can like that's the goal now. Can we get back to that Kruger era? And I hear a lot of fans like waxing poetic about that now. That was before my time.
I love hearing that now because the fans
didn't they run him out
did
of town?
Not appreciate Kruger at all while he was here, which I never got. Speaking of great guys that everyone liked and, you know, elevated the program and did things the right way, Kruger was consistently great, and I mean the fans just complained about him constantly.
They wanted Kruger to go out and recruit McDonald's All-Americans. They wanted Kruger to recruit like Dave did and to coach like he did.
Exactly, but I don't even think they realized what they had in Kruger coaching-wise until he was gone. But I think Brewer
until
is OU right.
Until made the Final Four.
Exactly. I will say part of this whole rant that got us started by Brewer, I'm glad you mentioned the Rebel Room's favorite player, or at least Brewer's favorite player you talk about every week, Bryce Hamilton, after you begged for it last week, did get some more minutes in these two games.
Menzies listened to the show.
I mean, is he a little bit out of the doghouse, as I think you said last week, Mike? Or what are we looking for Bryce Hamilton going forward?
I don't know if he's out of the doghouse. Menzies said he was asked about it before the game, and you know, the day before at practice, and he said, you know, we want to get these freshman minutes. Like, would we have liked to have gotten Bryce Hamilton 15, 20 minutes every night? Yes, but the situation didn't allow for it every night. So, like I said, he's not averse to playing freshmen. Like, he's started Brandon McCoy every game. He started Joel Tomboy every game. Like, he'll play freshmen. But just something about Bryce Hamilton has not worked out in terms of giving him those starters minutes.
If you're 12 and 10, you might as well play the kid.
But the thing is, Noah Robotham and Chris Clyburn are not, like, they're playing well enough that you can't just bench them. It would send a bad message for the rest of the program if you just bench a senior guy who's playing. I mean, they're not great players, but they're playing good. Those are two good players. And if you were just like to bench one of them or cut their minutes drastically in favor of Bryce Hamilton, that sends a message to the rest of the program that, like, we might not be trying to win all that much this year. And it's like a hard line to straddle. So
well,
I get it.
All three of them won't be on the team next year.
You say Bryce is as good as gone?
Hey, bro, you playing me 12 minutes a game? Pack up my bags. I'll go somewhere else.
He's already gone. They better start recruiting then. Maybe that's why they had Kyrie Walker in for a visit. A little 2020 or 2019 shooting guard. See the Bryce replacement? No, but Doghouse maybe working his way out of it. And if you, as you alluded to earlier in the show, you've got 7 games left and then the tournament. If there's someone that can take a developmental leap forward and really make you a different team at the beginning of March than you were at the beginning of November, Bryce Hamilton could be one of those guys. If he starts playing like a 5-star type guy, he can make a difference.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad we could stay on brand and get some Bryce Hamilton talk here at the end of the podcast. But I guess lastly, we mentioned at the start, Air Force and San Jose State this week, 2-0 or bust for the Rebels.
You got to get them both,
yeah,
right?
That's what I figured.
Yeah, it's Air Force, especially because of what they did to you up in Colorado. They put 100 plus on you. If you're not motivated to win that game, then you know you're in trouble. And then at San Jose State, that's a win. Like even UNLV on their worst day is going to win that game by 10, 15 points. So they'll probably win it by 20 plus, it'll be a chance to get a road win. That Wyoming game, I think they get that one too. You go 3-0, you'll have fans back on board to a certain extent. I think that's what you're looking at here.
All right, so yeah, a little bit of a good outlook going forward for UNLV. For Mike and Ray, I'm Case. Thanks for listening to the Rebel Room. We'll be back next week to see where the Rebels stand for another one, see if they can sneak into this top 5 and give themselves a chance for a little bit of a run in the Mountain West Conference Tournament.